So there's a nightmare in my closet. And this is, to me, I think it's just, anyway. There used to be a nightmare in my closet, and you have to see the pictures out, so you can borrow it. But before going to sleep, I always close the closet door. I was even afraid to turn around and look. When I was safe in bed, I'd peek sometimes. One night, I decided to get rid of my nightmare once and for all. As soon as the room was dark, I heard him creeping towards me. Quickly, I turned on the light and caught him sitting at the foot of my bed. "Go away, nightmare, or I'll shoot you," I said. I shot him anyway.
I shot him anyway.
My nightmare began to cry. I was mad, but not too mad. "Nightmare, be quiet, or you'll wake Mommy and Daddy," I said. He wouldn't stop crying, so I took him by the hand and tucked him in bed and closed the closet door. I suppose there's another nightmare in my closet, but my bed's not big enough for three.
Oh, I love that.
And I just think it's so cute. It's just about making friends with your fears.
Your fears.
Yeah. Anyway, the pictures are great. It's a great little book. So
nice.
I wanted to share that.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it talks about ruling my mind and being the one who's powerful instead of powerless. Right out of chapter 21, we go through those questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. Just like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Welcome to A Course in Miracles. If you look at your experience of good and bad, and you try to sort of make sense of it all, gee whiz, you know, some good experience for sure, some bad experience for sure. How do we reconcile this? You know, then there's this whole nature thing that seems to be the invisible hand of nature. And it's just so, some people turn to that and say, that's God. You know, he's so powerful and so perfect in so many ways. And yet things really go wrong in nature too. Did you know that over 99% of all living creatures on this planet are extinct? That ever lived. They all died out. Didn't make it.
Well, all living creatures on this planet, 99% are extinct?
Yes. Yes. They lived and died. Most of them millions of years ago. All the ferns and bugs and dinosaurs and different types of, yeah.
Lots of fossils.
Uh-huh. Yeah, those are the only ones that were close enough to water and to silt to even see. And so there's this good and evil, good and, you know, success and failure. We're studying the unreality of sin right now in this section that we're studying. And so what we're called to do is we're called to reconcile what we would call bad or failure naturally, because it loses. It's not happy. It's sin. It's broken. We can't find the love there in the way that we understand love, because it seems to take more than it gives. Like the cancer. Or like these big storms that just come in and within a couple of hours wipe out, I was going to say hundreds of thousands, we can now say millions of the last couple of weeks. Homes. People are just doing their deal. Hey! What about your personal life? What if something doesn't go right in your life? Where's the love from Papa? from God. So there is, you know, a challenge for all of us to reconcile a loving source. And this book says, God's love gives and only gives. Right, Wendy? Remember that? God's love gives and only gives. And it says that kind of love can't be understood or reconciled here. Everything here is sort of a give and take, and if I give to you, I have to ignore him while I give you, have a special relationship with you so you really feel my earnest love. You're going to have to wait.
Remember.
Right? Or be excluded. Depends on how needy you are. That's the world. This world can't understand the idea of constant flow. It can't understand extension, being fully connected to the source. So we have to reconcile our experience of good and evil. But you know, since in your own personal lives it's already happened to all of us, some of us many times, there's been a deprivation that was so low, so rotten, so unexplainable, maybe you even questioned that there is good. The power of good, or that God is powerful here. Maybe God's not. Maybe God's gone. Maybe God doesn't care. Maybe I don't deserve it. Maybe I'm in hell.
Maybe it really isn't true.
Maybe it really isn't true. And maybe the whole idea of spirit and God is yet another fantasy just to try to feel better. I mean, after all, who's ever seen God anyway?
I'm saying, where's the proof?
Where's the proof? Where's the proof?
Yep. How come more people don't know this, and why don't they talk about it?
What if it's all a hoax the church has made up?
Yep. Just for the feel-gooders. They're just lying to themselves, and I get it. They want to be happy, and so they just fake it. But the fact is, tornadoes, cancer, everybody dies. There's no really such thing as good. I mean, that's a pretty fair question.
But the same question is, if God were real, why would he allow such evil to occur on the earth?
Yes.
Why would he let his beloved son suffer like that?
Yes. Yes. And it doesn't take long to spend a little bit of time thinking about some of our very famous bad guys on this planet, like Hitler, who seemed to just go unchallenged for so many years.
Some time ago, I mean, it's throughout the text, but some time ago there was this conversation that, like, the answer to that question is that God didn't make this world, and that, like, I know it sounds a little crazy, but, like, there's so much freedom in that, because I haven't really seen any other faith, like, make that assertion.
I haven't seen it.
We made this.
I haven't seen it either. It's the first time that any answer made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Because God made the light and the day and the night and the animals, Adam and Eve, in the Christian story.
Yes. Yes. And God is fighting somehow with the devil. There's some other character that seems to make things bad while God's trying to make them good in the Christian Catholic. That's why I say when the Seventh-day Adventists come up, sometimes in a van full of people to my house, it's like, this is, let's go. Come on in, have a seat.
They won't come to my house anymore.
They're right. They got you marked off on the list.
Yeah, he's got a, well, he like this, there he is, some shamanic type, because he was talking about that Indian stuff or this something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen
it. They always come up with something, and they would tell me, read this from the Bible, and I go, this little quote, well, let me read the whole thing so I can get what you're talking about. So I read the whole thing, don't I? And they would go, oh, yeah, okay. And then finally we'd be like, you know, we have to go now, but read these things, you got it. And they just take off.
They must have a list, yeah, because they haven't seen me.
But after a while, they have this lady there, a friend of mine, my buddy was dating the girl that we were in the house, so, and then she told me, they don't like you no more. You're a something. They come out had something, because I was talking about different spiritual stuff, you know. Because I like Indian stuff, and they're, you know, shamans. And
so how do you reconcile it, right? In your own mind, and they have to do the same thing. Everybody has to do the same thing.
Well, you got to save face. So it's okay, whatever.
Right, I mean, you want to come to peace with everything, right? Aren't you here for that reason? To come to peace with what seems so obvious in your life? And then I think all of us here have somehow discovered a light, a hope, even. And I like how this book says it, that you don't search outside for your happiness and your peace, you find it inside. And then you will now shine light on the very things that you observe, whether it's divorce or a car wreck or moving your house or changing a job, having a family, creating a business, doing artwork. The light will come from you instead of to you. It's a huge shift in how to understand your own experience. That's why I love this book. Okay, so nonetheless, the book is working on that right now in this section. And so the next couple of pages, we're going to be working on this. Opening your mind, okay? Opening your mind now to be able to step back from your habitual thinking, to open your mind that what I'm about to say might be true, okay? I don't know if you remember, you've got to get this figured out, which is, you know something that's not true. That's what you got. The author knows and is familiar with your situation. It's another way of saying, well, I've found the problem, and it's you. And I found the solution. It's also you. So don't fret. You're closer than you can imagine to your own freedom. It's before you, more than you can even actually even accept. So we're going to do it with a bunch of pages and words. But nonetheless, you do know something that's not true. And for us to reverse that, it is actually going to take, dare I say, a miracle. You're going to need a miracle to get your mind pried off of knowing something that's not true. You need a miracle. I mean, a miracle is just this shift out of your ingrained belief. And it you shift from belief to unbelief. You shift from knowing something is one way to now knowing it's another way. Knowing it's material to knowing it's spiritual. To knowing it's limited to knowing it's unlimited. It sounds crazy. That's why it's redefined the word miracle in such a vast, beautiful way. In those principles in the front of the book. Okay? So, now, tonight, I'm going to ask you to look at this from, just, you know, we have this challenge I've teed up, I hope, for you. It says that you've got a bolus of thoughts that are not true. And the only problem with them is that you've witnessed them as true already. You see what I mean? You see how this is a problem. That you know something that's not true.
As if we believe our illusions,
yes.
Self-created illusions.
Yes, we don't actually think they're illusions. We think the illusions are the truth. And as chapter 28 beautifully describes, we've embedded for ourselves in our own dream a character for ourselves to play. And we're that one. We actually are that one. And the other characters we've made surround the one we now have isolated our identity to. That's in this book. And so, wonderfully, we're going to unravel that. And you will find yourself surfacing from this material with a load off, a relief. And it will feel like freedom, and it feels like love. And it feels like now you can re-engage, if you so choose, in your experiences from a sense of trust and honesty, a sense of defenselessness, a sense of open-mindedness, a sense of generosity available now, patience now. Is it all available now because of your shifted perspective? It's called Christ vision. Because now you see through. And you can connect now the effect with the actual cause. And you're included. I mean, it's a whole shift in what you are, is what this book does. To do that, we need to work on something that you already know, but it's not true. We have to remove what's the book calls a block, your block to the awareness of truth. There's a block. Okay? Now, so for the next few minutes, I would just like you to look at this particular aspect of the big picture. Okay? And that is, whatever you think God is, the over-controller, if there is one, whatever you think God is, science, if that's as far as you can go, whatever you think God is, a loving spirit, whatever you think God is, love, if you think God is an experimenter, what do you think God is? Can God be in conflict? Take a moment now. Take a few easy breaths. Call your body to attention. It's going to serve your mind for the next several minutes. Call your body to attention and bring it into the service now of your mind. For we're about to ask a relatively simple but a really unknown question. Then we would like to open our minds to a wisdom that goes beyond our own experience. Take an easy breath. Call the body to attention. Go still and associate now your brain and your body as they are the same level and let them both prepare to go still. Use some easy breaths as the only attention that you place on this body and brain, making them into an altar, making them into a place where nothing is going on but simple patience and openness to welcome in an awareness that is beyond your brain's capacity to invent. And what you would receive would be an awareness the answer to this simple question. Can the source of all, can the source of all, move your mind now to what the source of all means. Can the source of all be in conflict? And perhaps if your brain is still active, you might try saying, I don't know, in your mind, and relax. Anybody like to share your thoughts on that?
Yes. Yes.
Please.
Because right now, I don't know who or what I am, or if there even is an I.
anybody else want to share any thoughts that came up?
It's comforting to know that you just can't solve all problems. And sometimes you just got to throw down the surrender flag and say, I don't know. And the only thing I would add to that is, then ask for guidance.
Yeah.
And be open to what comes.
Yes. In the back of the book in the Manual for Teachers, there's 10 characteristics for the teacher of God. And the last one is open freaking mindedness as an honest reality.
And I would throw down a little patience in there somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Squeeze that in.
You bet, man. It's like number six or something like that. Yeah. Right?
The world rarely operates on my time scale.
Ah, you and me both, buddy. Yeah. Anybody else want to share?
Yes. I don't really know because I don't know or don't have an experience with what the source of all is. So unless I actually could comprehend that, I have no idea how to answer that question. I mean, my ego would like to have the answer to that. But, and it seems like the right answer would be yes. And but then if it's the source of all, and there is such thing as conflict, and I'm just using my mind here.
Sure.
Then it would have conflict too, because it's the source of everything. But that's just, you know, that's just logic.
Yeah, everything means everything.
Yeah.
Including conflict.
Yeah.
Or what looks like conflict, or real conflict.
I think conflict is a perception. The only one problem is the perception of separation. So conflict, I believe, is my illusion or my false perception. There's only one problem, one solution.
A misunderstanding.
This perception that separation exists right now, and I believe in it.
And that the separate pieces are vying, or fighting, or right. Competing. That's just not understanding. Anybody else have any comments?
Yeah, that's almost exactly what I was thinking too. Although I think I sense the source of all as being within me, as me, but I get confused by the ego being part of that, but I can see that it is part of that. But when I'm in it, it's very confusing. When I can stand back, it's perfectly clear.
When you can stand back, it's perfectly clear. Very good. And when you're in it, loaded with conflict. But when you stand back, oh my God, it's like looking at a child who doesn't understand. The curtains. I thought the curtains were monsters. They are big, and they do move by themselves.
And you make rustling noises.
Because the window's open. But still, it happens. And the imagination goes crazy and fills up. You know better. You've stood back as an adult. You can see, and you have to calm this child now. It's the curtains.
I'm reminded of a phrase that I heard once that I couldn't believe, but now more and more I believe. It's, everything you think you know is wrong. And I read that, and it sounded good, but can't be right.
Yeah.
Now I'm learning, wait a minute.
Lesson number one. Nothing I see means anything. I told you, I think the workbook starts with the final lesson. He says, you know what, I'll just give it to you. Look, when we start the lessons with the lesson. And if you don't get it, continue. And I'll back it up.
And if you get it, just toss the book.
Yeah.
Give it away.
Yeah. All the way to the last lesson. Give me your blessing, Holy Son of God. I'll step back. And I will listen to your wisdom in the place of mine. Yeah. Just so you can get the first one. Nothing I see means anything. This holy instant would I give to you, for I would follow you, certain that your direction gives me peace. That's the last lesson. This holy instant, where I could possibly accept that nothing I see, my own family, my own body, my own nature, everything I love, everything I hate, everything I'm worried about, everything I'm trying to achieve, means anything. So I would need a miracle for that, personally, right? So let me draw into my mind a miracle, a shift in perception to truth. This holy instant would I give to you. Be you in charge.
Well, it's true that nothing I see means anything, but I still live in this world, so if I give everything the amount of credibility that it deserves, which is nothing,
yes,
I can still enjoy everything that there is in this world, in this life, in the time and space that I live in.
Yes. I'd say better. Mm-hmm. You can actually enjoy it better. You can actually enjoy the losses now. There was no way to enjoy a loss before. Loss means loss, and you lost. Mm-hmm. Start crying and get the tears out. The sooner the better, because you lost. I don't see that way now. And my mind is much more inclusive. I mean, it's much more. It is inclusive. My mind is now inclusive.
In Landmark, there's the thing that Werner Erhard came up with, where life is empty and meaningless, and it's empty and meaningless that it's empty and meaningless.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same.
Yes.
The same point, right?
Yes. Yes. And yet it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And amazing. And empty and meaningless. And that doesn't mean anything that it's empty and meaningless.
Right.
It's a Zen sort of concept.
Yes. Yeah. Like a koan.
It can be rather depressing until you push past that meaning of nothing I see means anything to understand what's on the other side of that.
Yes.
It's very confusing.
It can be very depressing.
Yeah, because people go
bleak.
Yes. In the Landmark forum, you know, they say that, and then people go, "But my life means something. How can you say that? You know, what about God? What about, you know, people dying in China? You know, how can you say that? It doesn't mean anything. It all means something."
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get to like, no, it doesn't mean anything. Just bodies dying.
Yeah.
Cheery.
Pretty cheery, huh?
Cheery. Yeah.
That reminds me, I don't have the page number, man.
But it's projections, actually.
Yeah.
Not too long ago. Okay, it wasn't my first guess. Too long ago, we had a very nice discussion. I guess it was longer ago than I've done it.
If you're at a family's house and they have a big disaster mess in their house, or your kid's room and it's all messy, and you just think, I just clean all this stuff up and throw it away, and just don't care because you don't have any meaning with it, but they do. And it's kind of like we're not really affected by the hurricanes that took out other people's houses, but they did. They had meaning attached to that stuff. Mm-hmm. Meaning and memories and comfort.
And the ego theory.
Yeah, because it wasn't personal to us. It's a really good point.
But then you watch some of the footage, and you see people who are like wading through the floods on their like lap. So that to me is interesting. Is why is that people person see the humor in wading through a flooded?
Oh,
it's gratitude.
Have you ever been? I mean, I've been in some serious situations in my life.
Me too.
Where it's so lost that it is funny.
It is.
Like, you know what? There's something simple about this. All I can do is the next right thing. Mm-hmm. And there's no decisions to be made, but yeah. Oh my God, I just got to get this boat, get some stuff, whatever I can save, and go.
Often when I'm faced with death and I know it's imminent, I'll start laughing because it's just...
Yes.
Almost funny.
Yeah.
And then you come out of it and you go, oh my God, I just died.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, there's a big relief that happened in those moments. And I've been a couple times when I was right there, death's door. This is it.
Yeah,
and it was it's so simple at that moment. It's like, this is the last thing I'm going to see. It was like this.
Yeah, yeah, and remember
sliding down that tree.
Yeah, I did that too. Yeah,
you had that pericardial.
Yeah,
your heart. You started to laugh, and thought, "This is how it's going to end."
Yeah,
and you started to laugh.
Yeah, my heart was such a serious pain.
It's like a heart attack that didn't stop.
My heartbeat started slowing down, and I thought, "This is it." I got 2 more 3 beats and that's out. I'm out. And I just started laughing. Mm-hmm. Like this little thing. A couple of things. But you know, it's because it's so simple. It's really complex when you're still fully in control and you have choices. But when you have no choices, it's just
like,
simple.
It's like, so this is how it's going to happen?
Yeah, it's just like, there's not a problem. There's like two, three more heartbeats. We'll see how it goes. There's no time to do anything else.
Peaceful, actually.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Because you're not thinking about all these alternatives and options and how can I...
It's like, okay, here we go.
It's all come down to this.
Yeah. Remember those people who forced to jump off the Twin Towers?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Seeing them fly down. They had plenty of time to just say, well, that's it.
Yeah.
And get real
composed. That's right.
And Bob wondered what they went through their mind.
Yeah, that's time.
You know?
Yeah.
So they had plenty of time to think about it.
Yeah.
Like you're in an airplane.
Yeah.
And you're going down.
Yeah. I had one of those too. It is in an airplane, and I guess we all have stories like this, and it's worth any time. Yeah. I have a great airplane
story. But it brings you to the moment.
Airplane crash story. Yeah.
But it brings you to the moment.
But you had to tell you, I had a lot of time to think about it, and the piece, I was just watching the ground out my window. And as we were circling to let off fuel out in the middle of nowhere, I thought, we're going down.
Yeah.
45 minutes of burning off fuel, circling not too high above a prairie in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming or wherever.
Running out of fuel?
Yeah, and the plane was tilted like this. It was just going around and around and around and around. I thought, they're trying to burn off fuel so that the crash landing will be as few flames as possible. Get the dumping fuel, get it out. That's what I thought for a long time. And I just heard classical music in my head. Because after my brain was just so quiet, this is one of the things I'm going to do. And so I just watched, and I just heard classical music. It was a really interesting experience.
And did it crash land or what?
It didn't. It finally, after burning all that bunch of fuel, it flew back to San Francisco and landed.
Why? What was the point?
They didn't tell us anything. Except, I think they weren't sure they could land that plane.
Oh.
And what they did is they burned off enough fuel so that when they do land it, if it doesn't go well... There won't be a huge ball of fire. You could skid it to a stop, and they'll put it
out. That's the biggest thing, the plane. They want all the fuel burned off. They dump it usually, but they just let the fuel out, and so that when they go, there's no fuel in the plane. But otherwise, you're
50,000 gallons.
That's pretty nasty stuff.
If it's just metal, the metal will land and slide and be okay.
They try to avoid the big fire explosion.
But if it's metal full of gas, you've got a problem. Okay, so let's turn to page 405 in chapter 19. Page 405, paragraph 6. Okay, now remember, what we're working on is this thing that you already know to be true, which is not true. Okay? And David, you ready to go?
Number
6.
6.
Okay. How's you doing there?
We got glasses.
We need more glasses.
Time for a shift in perception, right, Wendy?
Yeah. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
All righty. When you're tempted to believe that sin is real, remember this. If sin is real, both God and you are not. Creation is extension. The Creator must have extended Himself, and it is impossible that what is part of Him is totally unlike the rest. If sin is real, God must be at war with Himself. He must be split and torn between good and evil, partly sane and partly insane, for He must have created what wills to destroy Him and has the power to do so. It is not easy to believe that you have been mistaken than to believe in this.
Is it not easier to believe that you've been mistaken than to believe that God has made something that wills to destroy Himself? Pretty serious thought. The Buddhists, you know, pondered on this for a long time, and they handed me a little statement, and it was this. It said, a knife, as sharp as it might be, cannot cut itself. You see, it would be itself cutting itself. And I like the way the Course puts it. Let's just cut to the chase. Destroy. If you could make something to destroy yourself and it worked, what did the destroying? Well, the part that wanted to just... Well, then it's still around, isn't it?
Yeah. You can cut yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you read this stuff, after a while, it becomes so obvious.
Yep.
It's hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah. It's metaphysical, okay? Yeah. That's right. It gets pretty hysterical. When you start to think about the bigger truth, the simple existence. When you're tempted to believe that sin is real, okay, and remember separation and sin are the same word in this book. So you're tempted to believe that separation is real. Remember that if separation is real, both God and you are not real. If separation is real, then it's now defining God.
That's right. I get it.
Yes!
I've read this book a lot, and I didn't get to that before.
Yes! You want to teach us?
I read too fast.
You want to teach us?
Yeah, give me some time.
Okay. So God now is being defined. It's just a little nod to God here of what it means by God.
It's the sound
God.
Of one hand clapping. Mm-hmm. I've heard that before. That'll do.
Yes. So now we're getting a little clue on what this book thinks the word God means. What does it indicate? And the way it's saying it is that if separation is true, in other words, you can have two different entities, separate, different, non-connected entities. Duality, right? Plurality. This sentence says, if that's true, two separate things that can compete, then God's not real, according to this book. The Hindus said, let's start with 26 and go from there. Lots and lots and lots of competing gods.
It's a long way of saying that God is, is one unified, all-knowing, all-loving, all-seeing being that,
yes.
That is a creator, not a destroyer.
Yes, yes. And the Hindus, I got this. I spent some time with this Hindu teacher, and he says, check this out! And he walked me through what he said. Look, it's more than 26, really. It's actually 330 million. That's the random number for forget counting. The way the Hindus work is they gather in a God authority figure for any need you might have. But then they start to relate to each other, like a family does, relate to each other. And you move up to just three. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. The creator, the maintainer, and the destroyer. That pretty much explains every possibility. It was made, it was kept, and then it was destroyed. But then something else was made. It's three, right? And he says, get this. And he shows me. And he says... Now, your highest understanding is that is simply three ways of looking at one truth. Mm. Even they, oneness is their ultimate truth. Only because it is. I was like, wow. Never heard it anywhere. These guys are going to teach you this stuff. In India. Okay, now. Okay, so there we go. Definition of God. It just teed it up. Separation true, God not. It also tees up a challenge for your mind, for what you think about God and what you are witnessing and believing. And it's got this is kind of an ultimatum here. If you do believe there are separate powers competing, then there is no God. Now, also, there's no you. You can't exist or certainly be maintained in competition. Since you don't even beat your own heart. Did you remember to beat it during the meditation? Or did that just happen? Oh, yeah, if you're responsible, you're in trouble. Let me just point that out.
Right. Who is the audience that this paragraph is speaking to? Is it people that believe in heaven and hell and the devil versus what?
It's Wendy.
Right.
And you. I can't speak for you for sure, but I see you walking around in your body, and you're probably under the same influence as I am, I'm thinking. And that is that when push comes to shove, I got this witnessing that my existence starts and stops with my body. And I think if I lost all my blood, I would have minutes maybe, and then there wouldn't be anything to think about. Or to experience.
It's written for others.
Or fun is over.
No, but I mean, I don't think in terms of it. I don't think in terms of this in this way.
Okay.
So I can't relate to what's being talked about. I mean, first of all, it's very obtusely written. Why don't they just say that God is one, or, you know, why don't they just say that?
Yes. They don't say it that way for a very specific reason. Okay? And it's on page 519. We'll go there. But before we go there, I just want to visit a little bit on your experience as Mark.
Yeah.
And are you the same as that post?
No.
What are you saying?
I think we got some separation going on here. Because you're not the same as the post.
It's not dumb as the post.
It stays here all night, and you go home. Yeah. Like every day.
I mean, there's people that would disagree with that.
Okay, but say, you.
You're connected to everything.
Right?
But I don't feel that.
I don't think you do.
Yeah.
I think you got a lot of proof that you're not that post. And I think Ray would have a lot to say about it if you tried to take it. It'd be a problem.
I'm just saying, you know, what's true for me.
So there's a little separation here.
Yeah.
There really is some separation here, and it's proven you all day long. This is what we're talking about. The essential belief that you and that are separate.
Uh-huh.
It's being proven to you as a truth that you don't even question. How could you? This is a stupid question, Andrew. Am I the same as the post? Are you kidding? I'm pointing out that you know something that's not true. This book is gently, in a way that won't make you run, introducing an idea that will help to show how you surround your experience, not your swimming in it.
Yeah.
Page 519, folks. Time to go there. Hold your finger here. Yep.
I want to just say that. So what we're basically... pretending in these passages here,
yes,
is that separation is unreal.
Yes.
And you did say that's another word, separation, for sin.
Yes.
And the title of this passage is the unreality of sin, of, yes, separation.
Yes.
And so that's how these things are connected.
Yes, that's the work that we're doing.
Abolishing the idea of separation gently for us.
Gently and at the roots.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to just try to deny it. La 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 la. But it goes deeper because the idea of sin, the idea that there are mistakes that are not correctable, the idea that there is actually loss, the idea that separation is obviously real, this goes so deep into our very being that this is what the book is trying to touch. It's
pretty radical. It's sort of like the fish in water that doesn't know water.
Exactly, Wendy.
So I guess you could say that the post and I are the same, because without me, the post wouldn't exist. I mean, me seeing the post, seeing you, seeing everything in this room, it's kind of like if I wasn't here for my reality, if I wasn't here, this wouldn't exist. So for me to be to exist, this all has to be here.
You better take some drugs and then go deeper into that.
No, I'm starting to see what
good.
That is. Because,
good.
That was a quick one.
Because it's like I lost the train of thought, but I
feel. Well, we're all with you. Everybody in this room is with you.
For a minute, I saw it. It's like,
yes.
It all has to be here. It all has to be here for me to feel like I exist. Because if I was blind and deaf, it would all have to be here, because then I would still be searching for things to feel or to sense in order to find where it was that I was in relationship to it.
It's like a circle, and you would witness yourself.
Yeah.
That's right. And you would know your surroundings by padding around, and a picture would be drawn, and somehow a picture map would be drawn. And this is you witnessing what you consider real. And so with your vision, your eyes, you can see things, or your hands, you can feel things. And that is a level of what you're willing to call reality or true. And we talked about truth last week or 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So there's some test. Is it you? There is some test that all things pass before we call them true. And then we drink them in. And we take them as real, mm-hmm. as true. Mm-hmm.
That's real in form.
And now you're ready to go to the next ideas of understanding of what's true. Yes, real in form.
That's
fine.
That's level one.
You can start at form. Absolutely. Start at form. We'll go to physics and how the post and you are made mostly of hydrogen anyway.
And mostly space, actually.
Mostly space of nothing, right? Mm-hmm. And all of it's got protons and neutrons, no matter what it is. They're all the same. Oh, my God. You know what? Protons, neutrons, and electrons, it's all it is, period. Right? Yeah, suddenly, oh, my God.
So it's an organization of basic parts that are informed by projection.
That's right. And so we look at a building made out of bricks. And it looks like it's five stories with a big arch in the middle. Breaking it down, it's the same bricks as in the wall behind. Sometimes people reuse bricks, you know, because they're just so uniform. They'll build a plot. Now it's all starting to look like bricks. So it's the post office, but you know what? It used to be the train depot. And they just reused a whole bunch of the bricks. It's just really bricks.
They're just those elements.
There's the elements, right? And there's a simplicity to it that starts to be inclusive rather than exclusive. So I was trying to find you the whole versus part discussion, but apparently it's not for us to be misdirected.
This reminds me, too, of the difference between our the capital M mind and form. So when you go home, Mark, you can think about the post. Mm-hmm. And you can even picture it, mm-hmm. like, even the mind. Mm-hmm. So... like, even right now, when we're getting agreement among us, mm-hmm. we're connected through our thoughts mm-hmm. and our mind, and we have this focus of the whole, which is a form, but that's when we're starting to assign meaning to this something that doesn't have meaning.
Turn to page 519, everybody. This is a really nice harnessing of thoughts, okay? It's called, the section called The Link to Truth. The link, 519 in the text. It's the link to truth. Isn't that nice? Like a bridge we talked about earlier?
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful section. So I want us to start And I'll tell you, man, this is such a wonderful, but we will get here eventually. So let's just do a paragraph 3, please, Jeff.
Excuse me. Perception is a choice that you want yourself to be. Perception is a choice of what you want yourself to be.
Good.
The world you want to live in and the state in which you think your mind will be content and satisfied.
Just like what Mark said.
It chooses where you think your safety lies at your decision. It reveals yourself to you as you would have you be. And always it is faithful to your purpose, from which it never separates nor gives the slightest witness unto anything the purpose in your mind holdeth not. Perception is a part of what it is your purpose to behold, for means and end are never separate, and thus you learn what seems to have a life apart has none. That was hard to read.
Isn't it? Well, I'll bet you we could take our fingers
to understand.
Here. Yes, yes. Julie, would you please read that to Jeff and for the rest of us?
Thank you.
I mean, this is kind of poetic. I'll bet you it's iambic pentameter. You probably count the way you heard him read it. I'll bet you count it with your fingers, and every single sentence is going to have a 10 count in it. Go ahead.
I'm not sure I understood sentence 5, but okay. Perception is a choice of what you want yourself to be, the world you want to live in, and the state in which you think your mind will be content and satisfied. It chooses where you think your safety lies at your decision. It reveals yourself to you as you would have you be. And always is it faithful to your purpose, from which it never separates nor gives the slightest witness unto the purpose in your mind.
Oops.
And always it is faithful to your purpose, from which it never separates nor gives the slightest witness unto anything the purpose in your mind upholdeth not. Perception is a part of what it is your purpose to behold, for means and end are never separate, and thus you learn what seems to have a life apart has none.
Uh-huh. And thus you seem to learn that what seems to have a life apart from you, Mark, it has none. No you, no life. No you, no post. No you, no me. It turns out it's kind of simple math that way. You definitely got it. You grabbed it. It's like it's you can't go seek no further than your own mind, I keep saying. Yeah.
You'll find what you're looking for that says that you're only seeing it because that's what you want to see.
Mm-hmm. And so the witnesses you send out come back with their marching orders to go find us, right?
Right. That's nice. Huh?
Yes. Whether that's good or fine, whether you're looking bad.
That's right.
It doesn't really matter. You're the one that created it.
That's right. You gave them their orders.
Yeah.
I'm confused, though. I understand everything up till 5, and then sentence 5 and sentence 6 seem in contradiction to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure what sentence... I just got lost on that one.
Okay, sentence 5. Perception is a part of what it is your purpose to behold, what you want. For, because means and end are never separate. So it's like then cause and effect are never separate.
So when I say
believe me, we're going there, Walt.
I won't be happy unless I have this. That's my perception, and that's exactly where my world is. I'm creating my world to have that.
And then it's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I get that, but then doesn't 6 bust it?
Okay.
Sentence 6 bust it.
And then 6. And thus, you learn what seems to have a life apart has no life at all.
Means nothing.
Okay.
In other words, without you, it's not.
Right.
In other words, you are directing your own witnessing. Mm-hmm. As Wendy says, she remembers that section where you kind of send out your messengers with a purpose and then they come back. You can only see what you believe.
That's
spy movie.
Or what you look for.
What you're looking for.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah, like there's a second a sentence in here that essentially says, to the world, seeing is believing, but in truth, believing is seeing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Walt, go for it. Number four. Punch the you.
You are the means for God.
Whoa!
Not separate.
Well, punch.
The means for God. And Mark just said, he says, wait a minute. The pulse only exists because I exist. And he's a very deep thought. Take it all the way to meditation. Good. Please continue.
I'll start over. You are the means for God. Not separate, nor with a life apart from His. His life is manifest in you, who are His Son. Each aspect of Himself is framed in holiness and perfect purity, in love celestial and so completed, which is only that it may release all that it looks upon unto itself. Its radiance shines through each body that it looks upon, and brushes all its darkness into light merely by looking past it to the light. The veil is lifted through its gentleness, and nothing hides the face of Christ from its beholders. You and your brother stand before Him now, to let Him draw aside the veil that seems to keep you separate and apart.
Beautiful. Beautiful. You are the means for God. Now we've defined you. Now we've defined you.
Seems to be a big arrow.
Yeah.
It's like everything happens.
Pointing right to you.
Everything happens through me.
Yes. Yes. And through you, and then you are the means for God. Cause and the effect are never separated. So you're the me, the conduit. Mm-hmm. And that's God that you're witnessing. Something apart can't exist. It's all extension. Everything that's true is extension. Even if everything that's false is still an extension, but it's believed to be a projection, which is just impossible when we get to the metaphysics of what this book is saying.
Even what's not true is an extension.
Yes, even what's not true is an extension of a dream or a desire, a fantasy.
It follows the same rules as the ego and the Holy Spirit. It just matters who you're listening to.
Yes, and it has the same power to affect you. One, it can move your emotions. The ego's thoughts and the separation thoughts can give you experience of separation.
Because we have the power of God, so we use that power for one or the other.
Yes.
That's why it's just as powerful.
Yes. Because
we're still a child of God, unchanged.
Yes. So if you wish to have a separate experience, go ahead.
You can believe whatever you want to believe.
Whatever you want to believe.
It'll be so. You will project it and perceive it as such.
See where it goes. You are, quote, Course in Miracles, you are dreaming of exile. You're safe at home dreaming of exile. Short sentence in this book. But it kind of says, you want to know what's going on?
It says everything.
You're actually safe at home in the mind of God, but you're dreaming of exile, where you're not either at home or safe. Mm-hmm. That's all.
And we wonder why we get afraid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd use the best to make yourself believe it, to experience afraid. You use the best power available. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make it true. But it does make it real. Yes?
That's creations. That kind of.
Yes!
That lines up with a call for love, too. Because, like, fear and conflicts are calls for love.
Yes.
So when we fear that separation, then it's almost like we're asking somebody else, help me, I'm sick, or help me, I'm falling, help me, I'm drowning, help me.
Yes, yes.
Whatever's happening.
Yep. Save me.
That just suddenly, love like. Me.
Good.
Made sense.
Good. Hmm. Yes. Yes, that's the vicious cycle of that. It has to be transcended. Yeah. But it's transcended by a knowing. That's the part where you need a miracle, because it won't be transcended by a witnessing from the level of a body, where loss is certain. There's got to be a respect that dawns in your mind.
So we come now, I think, to where forgiveness enters into this equation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to say it.
Because forgiveness now is the practice, the practical practice of releasing the thoughts that keep looking at the barrier, at loss, at bodies as real, as separation as being witnessed. Forgiveness, once you get the miracle now, okay, like you had a miracle. Anytime you get a shift that says, wait a minute, beware, you're in the presence of a miracle. You're in the presence of an awareness now. And if you will drink that in, if you drop all your resistance to it and say, what did I just experience? What the beep just happened? Now, if when this settles on you, and the miracle, and you find freedom and truth in it, forgiveness is the next step, because you've got old habitual thoughts that would put the post completely different, and you're a victim of it when it's present, and you're absolutely free of it when it's not. Nothing to do with you. That those thoughts will come back in like water behind a boat. The boat makes a nice wake. You're like, look at that wake. But if you take your eyes off and look back, it's gone.
But also, if there's no such thing as sin.
Yes.
You know, if it's just a mistake and anything can be corrected.
Yes.
Then forgiveness.
Yeah. Forgiveness is easy now because it happened and there's no punishment required because there's no loss.
Just right. Remembering, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. But I know I've been noticing how much I relate to myself, like things that when I get afraid about things, when I have, like, I perceive things, you know, as a threat or something.
Yes.
It's a threat I notice that I think in terms of, like, I could do something to myself and it would be not correctable. It would be a sin. Yeah. And I see how much I've been trained to think in terms of that there is such thing as sin. Like, not making enough money is a sin.
Yeah.
You know? Speeding is a sin.
Yeah.
I once had, like, a police officer stop me, and he came up to me and he said, do you know why I stopped you? I stopped you for speeding. And I said, okay. You know, it's like
get the lecture.
Yeah, but the way he said it was like I had committed a sin.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. And society, you know, kneeling at a football game is a sin.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
yeah. It's like guilty as charged.
Yeah. And if you follow you to the source of all, you say he just pulled God over for speeding.
He what?
He just pulled God over for speeding.
Yeah.
Because you came. You don't even know how to beat your own heart.
God, that's great.
You just don't even know where you came from. But you know what? You whatever got into that car, driving it in sixth gear. I mean, you should be in fourth. And that's how that happened. If you chase it all down, God was speeding and having a great time.
Then you're not a victim the way you see it. That's awesome.
If you're inclusive now. And that's what Christ's vision will do for you. It will help you be inclusive, but judgment is going to have to go too. Because pretty soon there's good God and there's bad God, which we call devil. And then, you're right back in the hands of the ego. You're probably not in too much jeopardy in that.
Yeah. I've had most police officers, I've had plenty of pulling over speeding things in my life, have said I'd say probably 4 out of 5 of them all said the same thing. Do you know why I pulled you over? I mean, actually, it was the same thing throughout my life. And so I said, I mean, I already know now. I know, because you're my guardian angel.
Yeah. That's the way to go.
and then you turn on the waterworks. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Bet you that works. I'm going to use that. All right. Okay, next paragraph.
A little safer next
time. You ready, Wendy?
You know what? I'm having a contact attack tonight with my eyes.
Okay.
I can't really read.
All right, Mark, could you give us paragraph 5?
Yeah.
Here it comes. This is for you, buddy.
Since you believe that you are separate, heaven presents itself to you as separate too. Not that it is in truth, but that the link that has been given you to join the truth, may reach to you through what you understand. Father and Son and Holy Spirit are as one, as all your brothers join as one in truth. Christ and his Father never have been separate, and Christ abides within your understanding, in the part of you that shares his Father's will. The Holy Spirit links the other part, the tiny, mad desire to be separate, different, and special.
That other part. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Through the Christ, to make the oneness clear to what is really one. In this world, this is not understood, but can be taught.
Yo! Yes, indeed.
That first sentence is like super wow. Mm-hmm. Since you believe you're separate, heaven presents itself as separate. It's like, that's that whole thing of like we're already in heaven, we just can't even see it.
Yeah. It's kind. It's graceful.
But we have to be so vigilant, careful. Every thought's creating my world. I'm constantly reminding myself that throughout the day.
That's right. So there.
So I mean, what you just said is, if I believe that I am, heaven will present itself.
Yeah. Kim, would you read the same paragraph for us?
So just believe that you're not separate from heaven in the first place. Say it every morning, and then the world will change.
Yeah. If you at least say, I don't know whether I'm separate or not. I don't really know. Can I just sit in a place of unknowing, Holy Spirit? You want to counsel me for a few minutes? I'm just going
to
be here and breathe.
It's a great place to be.
Oh, my God.
I like it.
Yeah, the stillness and the openness, and then you will establish an awareness. Please
That's
read
what
this
you term. Did to us in our meditation that opened it.
Nice. Good, Wendy. Thank you.
Since you believe that you are separate, heaven presents itself to you as separate, too. Not that it is in truth, but that the link that has been given you to join the truth may reach to you through what you understand. Father and Son and Holy Spirit are as one, as all your brothers join as one in truth. Christ and his Father never have been separate, and Christ abides within your understanding, in the part of you that shares his Father's will. The Holy Spirit links the other part, the tiny, mad desire to be separate, different, and special to the Christ, to make the oneness clear to what is really one. In this world, this is not understood, but can be taught.
Can you see the bridge building? Can you see the circle being connected by the Holy Spirit? Where it says, the Holy Spirit links, okay, drawing the circle, connecting all the separate pieces. The Holy Spirit links the other part, the tiny mad desire, mad being crazy, you know, mean unplausible, mad desire to be separate, different and special, to the Christ. To make the oneness clear to what really is one. Allowing the circle to see itself and each of its pieces to see that they make the circle. Now, in this world, it's not understood. This world being the conviction to separation, being fully drunk on the post and mark are different. That's not understood. The oneness is not understood. This is a place where you can go to avoid understanding oneness. Okay? But it can be taught, which is exactly what we're doing. Let's rock the next paragraph, 6.
I just wanted to say...
Yes?
Metaphors really help sometimes, and the separate but one. I'm not sure I'm like thinking of it correctly, but I remember you talking once about music, like is a note music, and that there are many notes, but it's like not like it's not music or like music is not a note.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It's another way to witness how alone. there is no power, but together there's all power. That the note itself, isolated, is not recognizable. It's for what it actually stands for. The note with all of the other notes together now have the power to communicate and transmit the melody, the emotion even, and they do it together. The isolation removes that power. Now, the song without the individual note also is broken.
Yeah, it's incomplete.
It's incomplete, and you take enough of those, even take one of those out in a key place, and it's jarring. The mind recognizes completeness and flow and love. And love is complete. So yeah, I love that
too. You can feel, like, I think just then I was thinking, you know, like, the feeling of joy, like, just real joy, like that, the completeness would be that joy.
Yes.
And it would be obvious if it wasn't complete.
Yes.
And that's the call, like, the, when it says, how long will, I can't remember, like, how, but the beauty of, like, being called home, like, God, yes. That, God's waiting for you.
Yes.
Like, right? That,
yes.
So that it can be complete.
Yes.
Yeah.
How long will you delay this, holy brother? How long?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was cool. Yeah,
the need to delay joy is another great
thing. It's like sometimes you could ask yourself if you're not feeling the peace or nothing. Say to yourself, well, how long do you want to feel this way?
Yeah.
How much longer do you
want? I remember to this day when I was...
All of a sudden, the choice comes right in. And
yes. Just, when you're trained to know that you have a choice, you... Even
only
may not
because,
be,
of course, the miracles.
Exactly,
I ask
for
myself,
me.
I'm so blessed to know that.
Yeah.
How
even if you're not choosing.
I feel this way. Otherwise, I believe that's my world and I'm a victim of it.
You're a victim.
Yeah, if you don't know, of course.
Bingo. And then even though you may not be, you may be drowning in choosing unhappiness, but then that one little, one thought away from a reversal. A reversal of sorrow. Because you know now that your own mind has that choice. You rule your own mind and you'll get the results. You release the darkness, even just for a moment, an instant, and that light will come and take over your mind. If you now let forgiveness do its job and continue to release the dark thoughts that are habitually coming in like a train, and you just derail the switch, the train goes off someplace else and you're sitting here in peace. It is the power of your mind.
Yeah, sometimes if I just put my thought, I'm not thinking, but if I put my attention on my breath,
yes,
it all just goes away. And then you realize, well, if it can go away, how real can it be? Even if it was for a couple of seconds of an inhale and exhale.
Yes, that's right. You can't get around that fact. This
so
is one
my
little
breath
sentence.
Is really helpful to me.
I'll never forget. It's very practical. That's a way to release. It's a reset switch is your breath. And a thousand other things, but excellent. I remember still to this day, the moment I drive my little yellow Volkswagen, and I remember the very piece of Summit Road that I was on, and I was listening to Course in Miracles audio, and this little sentence came out, there is no need to delay joy. I hit stop. Oh, I knew it was true. I said, I'm sold.
I remember, I don't know if it was that particular one, but I can remember the realization that I had to give myself permission to be joyful because I'd been sad for so long.
Amen, sister. Listen to this. Permission. Yes, me too. Me too.
There's even a story about being in... Isn't there a story about a prisoner doesn't just get out of prison and suddenly he's all happy and free?
Yep.
I think it's in the Course somewhere.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So in that unhappiness, it takes a while to like realize, oh, the door's open.
Oh, there. Yeah,
there's Plato's allegory in there. They're so used to in the cave. They know the shadows and that's comfortable. But you go out in the wild, colorful world, you're quite frightening. Okay, we're running short on time, so I'm going to bail now on the very wonderful paragraph there, but forget about it. Okay, go back to page 405, where we're in paragraph 6. In sentence 2, if creation is extension, Wow, there's another great definition mm-hmm. for you. Mm-hmm. Hello. So we ask so many times, what is creation? What is creation? What creation is extension. There you go. If creation is extension, the capital C creator, divine creator, God, creator of all, the big cheese, must have extended himself. Himself. Extended from himself. And it's impossible that what's part of God, of the source, is totally unlike the rest. It's impossible. Extension means it's still connected, therefore self-defining. If sin is real, well, then God must be at war with himself. Sin meaning separation. Sin meaning the unforgivable mistake. Sin meaning a real loss. A real loss. Something was destroyed. So God must be. What?
Aren't we kind of like, you know, created in God's image, you know, and I sometimes feel like I'm at war with myself.
Yes, you are. Hello, anybody else relate to that?
I always.
Happens a lot? Expert at it?
So, I mean, it's like it happens, you know? It's
yes.
Like maybe God is at war with himself on some ways.
Maybe you being at war with yourself is natural.
That's
for somebody who is beating his head against the wall every day. What's the cost of doing that?
And then you have to forgive yourself for being at war with yourself to be released from it.
So it's like a war between the ego and the angels of your better nature.
The truth will always prevail. And the more you present untruths, the more chaos you shall have. And so, yes, there's going to be a war between the truth and untruth.
Oh, as soon as there's a judgment, you're at war with yourself.
Uh-huh.
The and instant there's a judgment.
Yes, and you're denying what is right away, telling yourself stories and fantasies, and you're going to get chaos from that.
Well, because there's such a conflict with what is true, our true self.
There's such a conflict for what is true because our false self...
Our mind still knows our true self.
Yes, and...
And then anything other than that is conflict.
And then the other tiny mad part of our mind, the other part of our mind, which is addressed on page 5, 9, 20, the other part of our mind is actually still operating and witnessing. Right. And there's, so there's this true part, and that's then there's true. The fantasy part. And whatever you put your attention on is what seems to be your life. You, however, cannot disconnect yourself from your source. You can't actually have, you can't actually be separate from God, love, peace, happiness. All of that is what is your heart in this book. It's your heart. And your brain and your mind go off and trying to make separation real, but the heart cannot go there. And so chaos ensues. And so there will, yes, there's a war. There's a natural war. And the only way it will resolve is when illusion is released. And you go back to your heart, to your center, to love, to this awareness of your absolute extension of all. And play as long as you may, or decide to change up your dream into something with a little more color and peace, that's up to you. But the war will exist and will continue until you start getting back into this perspective that includes instead of excludes. Mm-hmm. And the inclusion is Christ's vision.
So even though it's an illusion, a child of God, the meditation can experience conflict.
Yes, yes.
It says yes, but I also said my first thought was that it's an illusion, but it is conflict.
Yes, it's an illusion.
But it's still experiencing conflict because the part of your mind connected to God is in conflict with the voice of the ego that you're also listening to, even though you're aware of the truth.
The part of your mind knows something that's not true. Yeah. Well, we're calling it illusion, but that's only because, you know, we seem to think we can see it. But, you know, we're in it. You really can't see when the fish doesn't know water because it's only been in water all its life. We don't actually see the air that we're around.
Right, unless we're a witness and we not on the battle.
Unless you can get out of and witness
above the battleground and look at it as the observer.
Yes.
We don't.
Yes. No. Yes, like you just did. That's correct.
And, correct.
Well, I just want to say, because that's I appreciate swimming in the metaphysical, but I think for Jeff's point, like, for me, there's, like, the super, super, super practical of everything that you just said that begins with a pause. Mm-hmm. And there's a million different ways to reset. It can be a line in the book, a breath, like Wendy was saying, but there has to be the pause. And if you start there, and it might be so small, and it might not happen every time, but it's like it... The illusion starts to crack, so you don't have to sit and like try to disassemble the illusion. I mean, the point is to actually do nothing, right? So you don't have to disassemble the illusion actively. Like, you just have to pause, and then it goes from there. Because I think that what you were just saying seems like this big grandiose thing, and I know I've witnessed, because on Monday it'll be 3 years with this course, that I can see that now. But coming in, like, and I can't see that all the time. So I just have to begin with a pause and not resist whatever it is that's in that moment.
To ask for that miracle, that change of perception.
To sit with that, right? Not to try to... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I experienced that just the other day. I was both sad and frustrated. I talked about this. And someone forced me to just take that breath. And it became the most peaceful, peaceful moment. In fact, I felt completely... safe, and I wanted to invite that safety for the other people involved. It was like an emotional situation. Mm-hmm. I felt this, my true self, show up, and I just sat in that for minutes and minutes and minutes. Mm-hmm. But then there was this invitation, because other people were feeling emotionally affected, of let that self arise in them as well. And it was just this very, and it actually did. Mm-hmm. This person, one of the other people affected, also stopped and took a breath. And then somebody said, you know, what happened to you in that breath? And this person described this beautiful story of like Lane. He said, I was at ease. And then described this beautiful story of like when I was a child laying on a trampoline looking up at the clouds. In times when there wasn't much to worry about. And it was just this beautiful, because we had both had this sort of like, by taking that breath, we both had this moment of like going to that place of rest and going to that place of like knowing everything's okay. And I don't know where I started, but that's just
you started with taking a break. You said take a break, and we did a big exercise here for, I don't know, 6, 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row about your little garden. Mm-hmm. And that there's a place in your mind where everybody's invited but you. And then you just let your mind go there and be in peace. Mm-hmm. You turn everything over to the altar. Mm-hmm. And so that's a great way to just take a break.
There was, I'm reading Eckhart Tolle, and he was talking about the pain body.
Yeah.
The pain body is a way of describing, way of describing the ego. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
The pain body is like something based on your past and things that happened to you and where you have this, you know, where you react to things and it attaches to things.
Yeah.
But when you notice that you do that, and whenever you're not at peace, whenever you're not in your true nature, whenever you don't have a sense of calm, and then you're in that pain body.
Yes.
To notice it.
Yes.
To say to yourself, I'm in my pain body.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you start to create distance.
Yes.
What you need is distance from that pain body. You need to actively create that.
Yes, you do.
But by calling it, that already
naming it what
creates
it
when you name it.
Which is like taking
it's like that is not me.
Yes.
So by naming
it,
that's what already instantaneously creates a miracle.
Right.
Yes.
And you need to actively, not just like let it happen or think that it automatically will happen someday.
Yep.
Like one day I'll understand it all and I'll be, you know, enlightened.
Right.
You have to actively do that.
In fact, you do. And that's the essence of a section in this book that is titled, strangely enough,
you
I need
to
do nothing.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it really says what you said. Mm. It really says that the you that is making all these problems need to do nothing.
It needs to stop.
What?
It needs to stop.
It needs to stop, and you need to get on that right away. And you do. You need to get on it. You actually got to wake up. Because in your stupor of sleep, you continue to do the same things over and over again, attack and defense, the pain body. The other way, of course, describes the pain body is the ego. And it says the ego only knows what it does not want.
Yeah.
Now that it's sure about. Oh, what a way to live, huh? No, not. Ugh.
Well, I just noticed, I noticed that there was somebody, I was talking to Masako and I was about to, like, criticize somebody, and I noticed that that was my ego or my pain body attaching to something that somebody did so I could make myself feel better, so I could, like, justify something and somehow pretend that because I wasn't feeling good at that moment, that it somehow was all justified.
Yeah.
But by seeing it that in those terms, I could create distance from that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You created distance from that.
Yeah.
It says, the Course says that there is one proper use of denial for us. That's to deny are the ego. Deny that the ego is you. Like you did. You said, I'm not going there. That's a whole thought system that would, equation that would poop out me being somehow better. I'm not going there. Deny that. Oh, life gets so simple. Okay, we have a couple minutes left. Let's see if we can drain this paragraph.
Did you catch yourself in that kind of judgment?
Page 405, paragraph 6. Okay. Okay. In sentence 4, God must be split. Okay, if sin is real, then God must be split. The source of all must have split himself and be torn between good and evil, partly sane and partly insane.
Partially,
thank you. Yeah, well, partly too. Partly sane and partially insane. Yeah, for he must have created what wills to destroy him. And has the power to do so. The knife can cut itself. The knife can somehow cut itself. Isn't that easier to believe that you've been mistaken than to believe in this? Hogwash.
That God is wrong.
Yeah. It's just throwing out. Look, try the easy way.
That makes you laugh.
Try the easy way and let's go with that. I'll tell you. Pretty heavy duty. All right, let's have a circle.
That was a great teaching. That was wonderful.
Yeah, that's good. Wow. Good. Yeah, made your interesting friends are, by all your inputs.
Hey, let's see.
Take a deep breath. So it's back to look no further than your own thoughts. Mm-hmm. Seek no further than your own thoughts. The one thing you should not do is get in your own way. Mm-hmm. You have the power to do that. You have the power to get in your own way and block yourself from the simple truth. Julie's told us all. She taught us. Oh my God. Take a pause. Take a break from the cycle of stinking thinking. Take a breath. In that moment will come a peace that I hope the more you do Course in Miracles and the more you do your practices, you'll recognize that peace as inviting a holy instant. And it gets addictive. You'll say, I could choose peace instead of this crap I was about to follow. I'm just going to go with the peace again. Just for a few more minutes. And those few more minutes will extend to the rest of your life. And the more you practice it, the better you will be, the better addict you will become to simply being at peace. When your mind is at peace, it's open, and it can hear the wisdom that is beyond you. By you, I mean the thing in the mirror. The thing in the mirror is a little sack of meat and water. But we are spirit-endowed, ascending beings that can enjoy joy at any time.
Enjoy joy.
Thank you. Amen.
Thank you. 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 Thank you